Yes.
This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, September 5th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is Bare Bones Broadcasting. My guest today is Dr. Viera Scheibner. She is a principal research scientist who is currently retired. She has three websites. Those websites are VieraScheibner.org, VieraScheibner.com, and VieraScheibner.net. Welcome to the program, Dr. Scheibner.
My pleasure.
All righty. You have been, you have these wonderful websites, and you indicate on one of them at .net that it has been 200 years since vaccines have been used, and that these vaccines have killed hundreds, thousands of men, women, and children who have either died or been injured by vaccines in nations around the world. Why is that?
Well, the principle of vaccination is wrong to start with, because when you get a natural infection, the bacteria and viruses enter via normal portals of entry, which is the nose and the mouth, and the immune system or immunizing the process starts on that level, on the level of tonsils. When you inject viruses and bacteria, plus all sorts of other toxic substances that are in vaccines, then you are bypassing these normal portals of entry, and what you cause is a harmful immune response, sensitization, or anaphylaxis, or increased susceptibility to the very diseases which are targeted by the vaccines, and also to related and unrelated bacterial and viral infections. It sounds like a mouthful, but unfortunately, that is the plain truth about vaccines. And so this harmful immune response is connected with a lot of pathological signs. They could be mild, they could be very serious, and they could be deadly. Ever since they started vaccinating in the very early 1800s with the smallpox vaccine, then reports of serious reactions and deaths hit the society. And what happened was that there was a denial, particularly by the medical profession, that these reactions are actually linked to the administered vaccine. So the denials and cover-ups and plain lies and even blaming the recipients for their reactions started right at the beginning. They usually targeted people who were disadvantaged, poor particularly, and they were blaming mothers of children that died, and they were saying that the mothers must have suffered syphilis and all sorts of things. So it actually came to me as a surprise that this type of hostile behavior by medical profession dates such a long time back. What happens at the present time, and parents should be aware of this, they should listen very carefully, that injecting vaccines is not where it all ends. That's where it all starts. So it is not a 10-15 minute affair, because reactions to vaccination are delayed and long term. So a child may not react straight away, but may react 2 days later. Then seemingly the reaction subsides, and again there is a buildup of symptoms between 5 and 7 days. Then they may subside, and again there may be a flare-up on day 10, 11, then build up between 14 and 16 days, around 21st day, around 28th day, even 6 to 7 weeks. And you guessed it, we are talking about the dynamics of critical days. Now, my involvement in the vaccination area started with a breathing monitor. On 12th of October 1985, at a party, I met my late husband, Leif Carlson, obviously a Swedish name. He was a Swedish biomedical engineer specializing in patient monitoring systems. And I usually ask people what they do for a living. And when I ask him that question, he said that he was a biomedical engineer specializing in patient monitoring systems. And I have no idea why. I just blurted out, would you develop a breathing monitor for babies? And he said, yeah, I think I can do it. And of course, it sort of made sense because in the 1980s, there were lots of and increasing numbers of reports of cord death, meaning sudden death of an infant, seemingly with very few or no pathological symptoms. And it was considered a mystery. And pediatricians and researchers thought that suddenly tens of thousands of babies are born with inborn faults in their breathing controls. So it was sort of natural to monitor breathing. They never looked at what happened to these babies before they developed breathing difficulties or developed symptoms. They simply looked at the wrong end of the story. So we developed this breathing monitor. It took a year and a day. It was a home monitor. And even though I don't distribute this monitor at all, so I'm not sort of advertising it in any form or fashion, because really the monitor, which we called Cotwatch, died with Leif. Leif died in 1994, and I stopped distributing or any monitoring with the monitor. So it was, but it was a very good monitor in the sense that it was a true breathing monitor. The monitors they are used currently are just motion monitors, meaning any movement is perceived as breathing. And that Cotwatch picks up all movement. It is a non-touch. It was a non-touch medical technology where the sensor pad went under the mattress, so the baby could roll all over the mattress in its little bed, and the breathing was monitored. And the monitor knew what was breathing, what was heartbeat, and what was other movements. And only breathing delayed the alarm. And that makes the difference between life and death. That's why babies die on those other motion monitors, because on those monitors, any movement is picked up as breathing. And so when baby stops breathing and the heart is still beating, as the situation is, then the alarm will be delayed until those heartbeat and breathing had stopped. That's a death alarm. So I had to explain it a little bit because it is important for parents to know this. Also, 20 monitors would not save a baby. It is only a passive reminder by alarming that something is happening, that something untoward is happening with the baby. So to cut a long story short, we also stayed in touch with all parents and advised them to give us a call when they had the first alarms. Sure enough, 2 months into monitoring, people usually started at birth. 2 months into monitoring, people started reporting alarms. And we always ask, what happened? So you had no alarms for 2 months. Now you have alarms. Something must have happened. And in all cases, people said the child was vaccinated. Of course, I'm cutting a long story short because there were much more of explanations and things. We also telephoned a pediatrician, our local pediatrician, and asked him what happens to babies at 2 months. And he said, they are immunized. So we put two and two together very quickly. And Leif developed a computerized breathing monitor, Cotwatch. We called it Cotwatch. Meaning, instead of just looking at the manual record of alarms by parents, we had computer printouts of the record of breathing. And the record was showing flare-ups of stressed breathing. And the stressed breathing is actually low-volume breathing. So it is not apneas, it is not cessation of breathing, it is a low volume, low amplitude breathing. That's the stress-induced breathing pattern. So along the way, we discovered a lot of things. Again, cutting a long story short, I published the results of the data collection with the microprocessor-based breathing monitor, COTWATCH, in a medical journal, Journal of Australasian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine. It is published in year 2004, and so people can easily download it from the internet. They just Google dynamics of critical days, ... COTWATCH breathing monitor, Journal of Acnem, ACNEM, and it pops up on the screen for you. And because that is also what I discovered, because I analyzed the results, the computer printouts from our monitor. What I discovered was this existence of the critical days, which is also the ultimate evidence of the causal link between the administered vaccines and what happened to babies, whether it is convulsions or breathing difficulties or whatever symptoms, temperature or death. They all will cluster. The symptoms will cluster along these critical days. It didn't take long, and we realized that it must be the vaccines that are killing babies. So I started going to medical libraries, because I'm an orthodox educated scientist. I was heading for the horse's mouth, straight to medical research. And between about 1987 to this day, I collected more than, now it is 120, maybe even 150,000 pages of medical papers. And I had to extend my house by 100 square meters just to house that library. It's a huge library. It's a national treasure. And to my surprise, in all these medical papers and medical research, they actually admitted quite freely that vaccines cause reactions and deaths. Indeed, vaccines such as DPT vaccine or pertussis whooping cough vaccine are actually used to induce encephalomyelitis in laboratory animals. And it could be mice or rats or primates. And of course, we are very close to primates. We have some 98% of genes in common. So what happens to primates is relevant to what happens to people. Even much of the recorded symptoms to vaccines in mice and rats are relevant to humans. Because what we see, the stress response and stress-induced breathing pattern, is part of a very important concept in medicine, which is called non-specific stress syndrome. This idea, or the observation, or idea based on observation, started in 1925. A Canadian medical researcher, Hans Scheyer, he noticed that before patients develop specific signs of illness, they will start with non-specific signs of illness, which is runny nose, upper lower respiratory tract infection, convulsions, and all sorts of other things, until there will be specific signs of illness. And that's what we see in breathing of babies after vaccination. And I study everything. Ever since I was about 5 years old, I got addicted to reading. I taught myself to read, and basically within a short period of time, together with my father, we used to go to the libraries. I read the whole library. And so for me, reading is something that is the key to my knowledge. And I first read everything, meaning figure of speech, obviously nobody can read everything, but I read everything that has been published before. And many people forget, particularly who have no idea about how proper research is done, they don't read any medical literature which was published before 1990. But of course, the most valuable medical research was done in the second half of the 20th century. And because the power of pharma and influence of the pharmaceutical industries was not as major as it is now, so there was very little money in medicine, but doctors were not very rich people, and particularly the researchers, It attracted the enthusiasts. It attracted people who were genuinely interested in research. And so they were truthfully or more truthfully reporting on the observations with vaccines. And even later, when the powers and influence of the drug companies and vested interests became more powerful, even then, one can read between the lines. So, as an example, polio, it was actually the first modern vaccine which was used in mass proportions, because who would like your child to get paralyzed, right? Forgetting that actually poliomyelitis, the polio paralysis, is triggered by injections of other vaccines. It's called a provocation paralysis. This is all published in medical journals. In late 1940s, 1950s, provocation poliomyelitis triggered by injections of other vaccines. Because paralysis is one of the signs, one of the pathology that may follow vaccine injections. Guillain-Barré syndrome, they also renamed it. They stopped calling it poliomyelitis. They started calling it ascending paralysis and Guillain-Barré syndrome and all such sort of names, because they came up with the idea of vaccination with the vaccine, and that would have made some inroads or would have put doubt into people's minds. So polio vaccine, when they conducted major mass vaccination programs again with the polio vaccines, within days they had outbreaks of paralysis in the vaccinated children and in some of them contacts. But probably it was the parents who also got vaccinated alongside their children, and of course many developed paralysis. This is well documented in medical papers. All my information comes from published orthodox medical research. And even later, in the 1980s, because these waves of mass vaccination programs, they come, then they subside, and then come again. Like, for instance, in India, they conducted about 10 years ago a major mass vaccination program. Now they are conducting a major polio vaccination program, so they come in waves. But every time, all these mass vaccination programs were within days followed by a huge outbreak of poliomyelitis. And what did they do? And this is how one has to read between the lines. So they would look at the babies that developed paralysis. Of course, they were all vaccinated. And they excluded from calculations of safety and effectiveness all those babies that develop paralysis after the first dose of the polio vaccine. And they call them unvaccinated. And it is also well known and published that about 67 2/3 of all cases of diseases that are caused by vaccination, whether it is polio or measles or other diseases, actually happen after the first dose of appropriate vaccine. So they excluded those that are known to be caused by vaccines after the first dose. They were all excluded from calculations as unvaccinated. I mean, when you read this, you have to read it 7 times more, because it is almost unbelievable that they would do such a thing. And then they will only look at the number of cases that actually happened after the third dose. So if a child didn't get the disease against which it was vaccinated after the first or second dose, but after the third, obviously most of the vaccine-caused cases already happened. So then they would calculate the safety vaccine after the third dose, which would be the tail end of these cases. And and one after another, you read it in these articles. So going back to the polio vaccine, for instance, that all sorts of other manipulation of the data, but they published Namibia. Namibia is divided into two sections, North Health and South Health region. And they only conducted polio vaccination in the South Health region, not in the North Health region. And they had an outbreak of poliomyelitis only in the South Health region and no outbreak of paralysis in the North Health region where they didn't vaccinate. I mean, this one doesn't have to be a rocket scientist to see exactly what was happening here. And so this is, as a rule, there are thousands of articles published like that about all so-called vaccine-preventable diseases, meaning diseases against which they vaccinate children. So we touched the number one point. Vaccines do not prevent diseases. Vaccines cause diseases. The Amish, as you know, the religious group living right across the United States, they claim religious exemption to vaccination. Not only they never had any cases of autism, but they, between 1970 and 1987, for 18 years, they had not reported a single case of measles. So an unvaccinated community and not a single case of measles. And this was the time when the well-vaccinated non-Amish communities in the United States still reported regular 2-3 years epidemic of measles, obviously, in the vaccinated children. And so, and they still claim success because the incidence was a little bit lower, or so they say, right? Let's not forget that we are not really told the whole truth, particularly in statistics and numbers. But anyway, they claim success because the numbers of measles allegedly went down. And then, of course, the well-vaccinated outside non-Amish communities started having huge epidemics in the vaccinated children after 1982, and the Amish, after 18 years of not a single case of measles, started having large outbreaks in 1987, on the 5th of December, to be precise. And this is published in Orthodox medical journals. So this should have alerted all those pro-vaccinators that not only the vaccine is useless, that it kept measles occurring at the time when there would have been no occurrence of measles. Another thing, that when they introduced the measles vaccine in the United States in early 1960s, immediately the vaccinated children started developing atypical measles, and especially a vicious form of measles, which is because of the derangement of the host response by vaccination. So with very high mortality, according to some figures, 12 to 15% mortality. So that's not a very desirable effect of vaccination, is it?
No. This is amazing. And of course, you're saying that it causes illnesses, and I totally agree with you and respect what you have done and written. And it causes immune system damage. And you indicated in a video that I watched that people who have these diseases naturally, like chickenpox, will develop the immunity, and it's natural. Whereas if they get a so-called vaccine for chickenpox, that goes totally, it's administered into the body in a different way, and it's very, very dangerous, which you also alluded to today.
Yes, and it is valid for all so-called vaccine-preventable diseases, meaning diseases against which they vaccinate. They, not only that, now we have another problem, contamination of vaccines. Again, I start with the polio vaccine. Polio vaccines to this day are produced on monkey kidneys. Initially on just mince kidneys of wild monkeys. Now they say that these are monkeys that were brought up in laboratories, so they wouldn't be as contaminated. But that's actually not true, as you will see. So they are produced on monkey kidneys, monkey kidney tissue, or monkey kidney cell lines. And again, one doesn't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that monkey will have monkey viruses, 40 of them, SV1 to SV40. And SV40 is the one that has been properly researched. And right from the beginning of mass use of the polio vaccine in the late 1950s, researchers discovered that this SV40 virus causes cancers in hamsters. And it was brain tumors and lung tumors, mesothelioma, asbestos disease, which means that actually the so-called asbestos disease is not caused by asbestos. It is caused by SV40 monkey virus. And this has been published ever since the late 1950s, these days in journals called Oncogene, which obviously was specializing in reporting on cancers. And about they admit that about 20% of sufferers of mesothelioma, alias allegedly asbestos disease, actually have never been in contact with any asbestos, have no asbestos on the lungs, but they were vaccinated either as children or several times. You see it on television, open your eyes to it. Grandmothers who looked after a lot of grandchildren developed mesothelioma, or the recent one is mother who had four children. She was on Australian television, developed this characteristic SV40 cancer, and she was saying, but I never been in touch with asbestos. I never been exposed to asbestos. But of course, she had four children. And nobody is going to tell her. And this type of wrong information and skewed information, unscientific information, inadequate, I don't know what I would call it, incompetent information is spread and people believe it. You start saying that people believe the propaganda of the drug companies. I don't know why, because these days there is no excuse. Anybody can find everything they need to know not to vaccinate on the internet. Medical journals even publish about the corruption of the system. Editorials are written all the time reporting on deliberate falsifying of the research of research or trials or vaccines. I mean, it's well known. It's an old hat. It is the best kept public secret. So what do people do with the internet? To buy rubbish on eBay? Probably. I don't even know how to use eBay, but I know how to locate medical papers. I get a lot of emails, people requesting, please send me an article. No, I teach them how to download medical papers from the internet themselves, because it is so easy, and in most cases, you can actually download any medical papers without paying for it. If you download it as the articles listed in the references to other articles that are available, you can read. It says free of charge, available free of charge, or the full text free of charge. And I trust that one doesn't have to be a genius to read medical papers. I knew a builder's laborer, a man who probably didn't even finish his high school, but he started going to medical libraries. He taught himself to read these medical papers, and he rang me and he says, I don't know how to read the graphs. And I said, take your index finger, put it on the graph, put it on the legend underneath, which says the explanation, and follow with your finger every line. And he says, wow, I've got it. So that's right. I have great trust in people that when they want to, they can learn a lot of things. After all scientists, including myself, we learned because we have to do our homework. It was not enough to go to lectures. And I was very fortunate in former Czechoslovakia, in the Slovakia part of former Czechoslovakia. Our teachers were constantly telling them at all levels of education, what we are teaching you may be obsolete by the time you finish this study. We are teaching you to learn. When you finish your study, that's when you start studying in earnest. Learn on the job. But these days, particularly doctors, they finish their university study, and they insist on the knowledge that they were presented during their university studies. And don't think that I'm exaggerating, because, you know, when I don't go to doctors as patient, but when I meet them, I challenge them. I very quickly establish within 5 minutes that their knowledge is inadequate, and that I call it ignorance, which makes them danger to their patients. Because they, for instance, put everybody on high blood pressure tablets. I had to go to a GP because people over 75, I am 77, have to go for medical every year for the driver's license. I mean, waste of resources. But anyway, he measures my blood pressure and he says, it's high. I said, of course, because I briskly walked, almost ran here. Effect on blood pressure? I said, oh, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Oh, yes, it does. And I said, look, you said you will do some blood tests. How about in half an hour you measure my blood pressure again? And he said, no. I said, aren't you even curious? And he said, okay. He measured it half an hour later. It was back to normal.
Amazing. You proved Amazing. Your point.
That's right. Absolutely. And, well, I didn't go there the second time. I found a different GP who knew me, and he knew what I was doing. So he didn't worry about my blood pressure, which was, by the way, normal, because actually I didn't walk there, I drove there. But anyway, so knowledge is the most important thing. There is no excuse these days for any parents not to know that you can't trust anybody who is selling you something. You can't trust anybody who makes a lot of money on something. Of course, they will not tell you that vaccines are killing babies. But by the way, when we saw pediatricians and CODTES researchers, which are monitor, CODWatch, some of them said, Vera, we are not that stupid. We all know that babies are being killed by vaccines. And I said, so what are we going to do about it? And they said words to the effect of, it's legal. Nothing can happen to us doctors. So they would kill a child without batting an eyelid. And then many of them, or some of them, will call the child protection agencies and the police, because babies, of course, develop, particularly after being given so many vaccines at one session, they develop serious pathology like subdural and retinal and other hemorrhages. And by the way, they are not true hemorrhages. It is only a sign or consequence of increased vascular permeability and vascular permeability of the vascular walls. I actually have an article that shows the scanning electron microscope photograph of a red blood cell squeezing, deforming itself, sneaking through the spaces in the wall of the blood vessel. So it is usually just a thin film of red blood cells. And they don't even know that. You can imagine, I write a lot of expert reports for these cases of shaken baby syndrome, and I really can document very well that these are not traumatic injuries, they are not traumatic bleedings, they are a consequence of increased vascular permeability caused by vaccination, by toxins in vaccines. So it's you can imagine how I feel. I often despair because most people just don't know all this. Doctors don't know all this. And of course, the lawyers don't know. The judges don't know. And they are more inclined to believe the doctors who are saying total nonsense and total lies, don't document their reports with any medical papers. And here I am with a major report, important statement documented by medical paper, maybe even more, and they would believe the doctors. So it's a very dreadful world we live in of ignorance, which is believed and perpetuated as the truth. So where is all the technology leading us? Nowhere.
Indeed. And there's people in jail now for killing their babies or for harming their babies when it wasn't their fault at all.
That's right. I am dealing with a lawyer now for whom all this is new. The twins, IVF twins born to a young couple, and at 4.5 months one of them died, of course subdural retinal hemorrhages and all that stuff, and the lawyer first has to learn that this is not what it seems to be, that I just told him welcome into the real world, and of course fortunately he's enthusiastic and he realizes that he will get a different expert report than he would get from a doctor.
Absolutely. You said that your library was a national treasure. I think you're a national treasure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, all right. Keep talking. Actually, I said the same thing. The Royal Australian College of General Practitioners in Australia for 2 years invited me to participate in the postgraduate training of GPs to present the case against vaccination. And when the medical educator introduced me for the first time, Dr. Vera Scharner, the top world expert on dangers of vaccination, I looked behind me like, who is she introducing? And then I said, oh, it's me. Keep talking.
Well, now you're in Australia. And do you have the same pharmaceutical industrial giants there, or do those that are headquartered here in this country, in the United States, do they also ship vaccines and things to Australia? I know they ship to Africa and to other places.
Well, actually, I don't know, so I will not answer this question, but because they are multinationals, most of them, you know, it doesn't matter where they are.
Okay.
Yes, but that's really parents should stop all this nonsense by not vaccinating. See, in Australia, vaccination is not mandatory. People don't have to do it. But of course, what the politicians do, and recently I published along these lines, how come our politicians, many of whom are lawyers, they don't know the Constitution, they don't know the law, and enact unconstitutional and illegal laws. One of them is that certain social security payments, they call it tax payments, to parents will only be given if parents fully vaccinate their child. But when you read the law, it says that a child is considered immunized if it went through the natural disease and developed natural immunity, if the parents vaccinated, or if the parents sign a conscientious objection to vaccination. Now, that alone is illegal, because why would you have to be a conscientious objector to something that is not mandatory? And so that's number one. Then, secondly, the doctors must countersign this conscientious objection. And they don't know the law, they don't know the Constitution, and they would publish dreadful things like, we should have conscientious objection to conscientious objectors. You know, this is illegal, unconstitutional stuff. And our Prime Minister is a former lawyer, and she would allow a law like that to be enacted. I mean, it defies description. I write about it, I publish about it, but they just go like a bulldozer. But they are showing their own ignorance, and people should know this. So people should read the law as it is and see that actually they don't have to vaccinate the child. They still get all their payments, and they just have to find a doctor who knows the law and knows that he must countersign this conscientious objection after pointing out people the pros and cons of vaccination, okay?
Right. I think a lot of doctors don't do this. They don't talk about the side effects. They don't tell their patients that they're dangerous. They just really act very authoritarian and say when parents bring their babies in, and I think that's the whole purpose for these well baby visits, is to get them going on vaccines. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making as much money. I think that you should only go to a doctor if you have a traumatic injury, like if you've been in an automobile accident or something and you need a broken bone set. But why take your children to the doctor if they're well, if they're nothing's wrong?
Exactly. And of course, those doctors are breaking the law. And I'm pretty sure that there would be such a law also in the United States. But certainly in Australia, doctors have a legal duty of care to warn of all reactions to all medications and procedures from the perspective of the patient, and even if the patient does not ask. And of course, they are breaking the law. And what is behind it? Ignorance and also ill will. You know, it's, I call it a hatred of the patient, because, and this is discussed in the media often, that doctors are hostile towards patients, and the patients are hostile towards towards doctors. And because, you see, healing should not be subject to any commercial transaction. I know there is at least one medical doctor in the United States, I think his name is Patch Adams, who charges for his lectures, and but then money that he collects, it carries him on over so that he doesn't charge anything for medical treatments. And that's how it should be, because healing should not be subject to any commercial transaction. And the minute money enters the scene, all ethics and all goodwill, all good intentions are out the window. And so, but one good thing in Australia now, they discontinued a special payment for doctors who vaccinate. But in England, a doctors at the whole medical practice is given quite large sums of money if they have either 85 or 90 or 95% vaccination compliance. And that's wrong, because then they will do everything possible, including lying to parents and not advising them of the real dangers of vaccines, just to get that big premium at the end of the year.
Right, and I think that's probably true in this country. And, of course, we have the pharmaceutical companies that are teaching in a lot of the medical colleges, and they are promoting the vaccines and chemicals and other things, and certainly are not promoting anything natural.
But why don't doctors use their own eyes? Don't they see what those vaccines do to children? Actually, it was one doctor who... it was part of a correspondence in medical weekly publication,
journal,
newsletter.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote that he vaccinated close to 1,000 children and he's never seen a single reaction to vaccination. But I've seen a lot of invasive infections and meningitis and polio. And I couldn't stop laughing my head off. Well, those are the reactions to those thousands of vaccines that he administered.
Right.
He failed to link it to those vaccines. Another thing, I actually attended a conference on shaken baby syndrome in Sydney, which was just before 9/11, between the 2nd and 4th of September, 2001, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I challenged every speaker, and of course I talked to people. And a detective from the United Kingdom, from England, was there. We were there. I made sure I was in the same queue for coffee with him. And I said, isn't that interesting that tens of thousands of parents all over the world, from all walks of life, from all educational and other backgrounds, know to how exactly shake a child to get exactly the same injuries, and always after, never feeble before vaccination. And he says, you have a point. I said, I know I have a point. And walked away.
Indeed.
And so this is so nonsensical. Why don't they use their own eyes and their own judgment? Why don't they see what anybody else can see? Because they just don't want to see. I even challenged a prosecutor from Salt Lake City, Utah, who wanted computer simulations of shaking to be admitted in evidence in court. And so after his talk, I put my hand up and I said, have you or anybody else ever seen anybody shaking a baby? that subsequently developed what you call 100% foolproof evidence of shaking. And he said, no. And I said, well, then you have no evidence. But if you started looking at the vaccination of these children, you would see vaccines going like a silver thread right through all these cases of shaken baby syndrome. And he absolutely deflated. There was no more pushing for computer simulations of shaking to be admitted in evidence, etc. So he deflated, all right, yes, but he stopped looking into my eyes. He didn't look in my eyes ever when I met him in the corridors later on. And so, you see, this is a very, very dangerous situation. And technology and information technology doesn't seem to be making any inroads into human ignorance and stupidity. People can even Google human ignorance and stupidity. You get reams and reams of interesting material.
I'm sure.
People should, because they would also find themselves there occasionally.
Right. Maybe even a picture.
Well, mine is the picture, but ignorance is very bad. Knowledge is power, and ignorance is painful.
It is, and sometimes deadly.
Well, deadly, actually. Yes, you're right. You add another word to it, so ignorance is painful and deadly.
Yes. Oh, what a terrible thing. And, of course, we have compulsory vaccination here in this country. Many of the states and the counties require children to be vaccinated before they enter school. And parents just go along with it. I don't even think that I would have children be attending public school if I had school-aged children.
When I was in California years ago, I was interviewed on a radio with a doctor from the health department there. And I said, mandatory vaccination Indian laws in the United States amount to medical tyranny. And he says, but it's not mandatory. You know, people can sign on the form. And I said, people, listen to Don from the health department. He's just going to tell you how to legally avoid vaccination. And he continued, they should turn that form on which they record vaccines for the schools and things. And there is a dotted line on which they sign they don't wish their child to be immunized. That's what he said.
Wow.
And that's what I said. People listen to Don. He's just going to tell you something.
Sure.
Yes, but it is more difficult in the United States not to vaccinate a child. I know that. It is much easier in Australia. And of course, that law, which really discriminates against poor people, because rich people don't depend on any social security payments or tax, whatever, payments, and they are totally unencumbered, and there is no obstacles for them not to vaccinate their children. It is only the poor people that are in the firing line.
So right.
And the politicians, well, do they see it? Oh, no, they don't.
Right. You can even get put in jail for not vaccinating your kids in some areas in this country.
No, here they don't, but they would get in jail for shaken baby syndrome, yes.
Right.
Because a lot of babies die, and the doctors are absolutely vicious. Before even any tests are done, people rush a fitting a child with convulsions to hospital, etc., and they stay away, called the Department of Child Protection. And so it is a very, very nasty situation here. And it's based on ignorance and ill will, hatred of the patient.
Right. Oh, my goodness. You're a wealth of knowledge. I certainly do appreciate you sharing that with us tonight.
But everybody can be more knowledgeable than they are, and they should develop liking of acquiring knowledge. People should like reading, but maybe many are dyslexics and can't even read. You never know what's behind people's ignorance.
Right.
But if we go back to vaccines, so vaccines do not prevent diseases, vaccines cause diseases. And then, of course, vaccines cause a long list of reactions. Actually, the Australian Immunization Handbook, which is a pro-vaccination handbook, obviously, lists four full pages, single-spaced, of reactions to vaccinations, which actually include death. So even if they go to the official source of information, they can ask their doctor, please photocopy for me those four pages of reactions to vaccination. It would be enough for them not to vaccinate, or at least think twice before they would vaccinate it. Another thing is that infectious diseases are actually beneficial for children. Natural infectious diseases, such as measles, mumps, rubella, whooping cough, they prime and mature the immune system and represent developmental milestones. And vaccines do the opposite. They delay the development of milestones in children. Even the whole generations of people are maturing much later. They stay with their parents until they are 30 or even longer because they are not maturing fast enough and in a normal sort of time. And you have got behavioral problems, not just autism. There are learning difficulties, even criminality, bizarre criminality, murder, suicides, a lot of product inserts for a lot of pharmaceutical products. They list homicidal and suicidal ideation as one of the observed reactions to medication. All those shootings in schools, etc., and shootings just about everywhere suddenly. When they looked at the medication of these people, all of them were on some orthodox medication. And so it's a very serious problem. Then we have a pandemic of diabetes. Young children have diabetes. Where would it come from? Of course, from vaccines, because the vaccines destroy all systems in the body, and it could be either central diabetes, hypothalamic pituitary axis damage, that's at the base of the brain, or it could be damage to pancreas. So it could be central diabetes, or it could be pancreatic diabetes. And it is caused by vaccines. Vaccines do this type of damage. Vaccines derange the production of insulin. The opposite to no insulin or low insulin is hyperinsulinemia, meaning too high a level of insulin. They call it infantile hyperinsulinism, which is a prevalent problem, and it is implicated in the pandemic of obesity. So it is not eating at McDonald's or eating too much of bad food, not at all. It is actually increased level of insulin, which gives this unsatiable hunger. That's one thing, so that's the way overeating may come in. But in 1978, Dutch researchers established that within 8 hours of DPT injections, babies develop a statistically significant increase in the serum insulin level. And it sometimes rectified itself, or sometimes it persevered. Then they also published, this was in 1978, but in 1990s, they published that adults of childhood onset of hyperactivity have deranged metabolism of sugar. It's not taking too much sugar, but deranged insulin production, which controls the sugar level. Then also these obese children have pre-diabetic states, they have endocrine problems, they have a lot of, they are very sick children, and it's not just obesity, it is all, it all starts with childhood vaccines in babyhood, in when they are infants. So this is something that many people are very surprised, but when you just study a little bit of medical literature, you will stumble over vaccines.
Right. And,
these things are actually damage to all organs is part of the product information for all pharmaceutical products, and the triple vaccine, DPT vaccine, Tripedia, Sanofi, Pasteur lists autism as one of the observed post-marketing reactions to their vaccine. It is not just the MMR that causes autism, it is any vaccine that causes autism. Then gastrointestinal problems. All vaccines cause, including the MMR vaccine, they cause gastrointestinal problems. So what are they on about? that MMR doesn't cause autism. And of course, it all starts in the gut, and then it affects the function of the brain. In many cases, it may not be an organic damage to the brain, but it is the damage function of the brain and things like that. So just head for the medical literature and you get answers to all these things, and there would be some vaccine and some medication lurking in the background. With obesity, when there is another major factor, and this is antibiotics. Now, when children get vaccines, they develop ear infections. And how they are treated? Antibiotics. Within a year, many children get several rounds of antibiotics. Now, antibiotics are given to farm animals, to food animals, to make them fat and beefy. What do antibiotics do to children? Make them fat and beefy. Because it is not just fat. They are also much taller. They are more muscular, so which is caused by those antibiotics. So there is, you know, we have to search for the truth, for the substance of things, not just superficial sort of statements of someone who has a vested interest to sell you something that may harm you.
Exactly. Well, you've certainly inspired my listeners. I'm certain they will be more productive in looking at the literature, and hopefully they will tell their friends and family, and hopefully those people will believe them. Oftentimes, when people who do have some information try to share it with others, they look at you like you're nuts.
That's right, but this is very easy these days to get the right information. And knowledge is power. Ignorance is painful and deadly.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and I actually once talked to a teacher. She's a Rotary member and retired, and they are now pushing for polio vaccination in India. And I said, you have to look at the facts. She said, I'm not interested. And I said, what was your occupation? Teacher. I said, what did you teach? Biology. I said, I don't understand that a teacher would not want to learn. I said, I am astonished that you just rely on your obsolete information that is totally useless, and in consequence, you are harming children. So it's a very serious thing that even teachers don't want to learn, and people don't want to learn. We never have enough information. We are never finished with studying. We should continue until the last breath in our bodies.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Very good. Well, thank you so much for being on the program. I hope that we can do this again sometime.
My pleasure, and anytime.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.